Welcome to the podcast. I'm Dr. Val Jones, founder of GetBetterHealth.com. Today I'll be interviewing Bert Rhine, attorney for Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, to get his reaction to today's Supreme Court ruling in the Wyeth versus Levine case. Welcome to the podcast, Bert.
Thank you, Dr. Val. I'm pleased to be here.
You know, the New York Times is calling Wyeth versus Levine the most important business case in years. Can you summarize for the audience what just happened?
Well, what the court did was examine the record of the case to determine whether the action brought by Ms. Levine was foreclosed by Wyeth's compliance and full compliance with FDA regulations and labeling decisions. And the court stated that it did not believe that the evidence of record was clear enough as to the difference between or the collision between FDA's regulatory approach and the approach of the jury to warrant foreclosing Ms. Levine from having her lawsuit. In other words, they rejected Wyeth's two preemption defenses, finding that while in certain circumstances the FDA could foreclose a company from changing its label, the court was not persuaded that the record showed that this was one of those circumstances. And second, the court held that the FDA's general regulatory regime was in and of itself insufficient to foreclose the lawsuit, that certain lawsuits could be compatible with that regime unless the FDA itself had a formal regulation requiring a company to adhere to a label without changing it under federal approval. So for those two reasons, the court said this lawsuit was properly founded and it was up to the state of Vermont to decide whether Wyeth's conduct was appropriate.
So let me try to understand this from a lay perspective. What that means is that juries now across America, there's a precedent at least for them to have the right to interpret drug labels as they see fit and overturn what the FDA has approved in terms of labeling. And they can decide if they feel the labels are sufficiently caveated or not. Is that more or less right?
Well, and that's what the Supreme Court said they could decide here. In fact, the court said they didn't even have to decide what the label should have been. They could just say, well, whatever it was, it wasn't good enough. And that was all that was required from a jury. That was all that the plaintiff had to show. Even though the FDA, as we had argued to the court, had specifically considered the problem that arose from exposing arterial blood to fenugreek and had come to a solution in the label that the FDA thought would best protect the public health.
And these people who can decide now what is sufficient for a label, these are not people with any kind of medical background, correct?
Correct.
So regular sort of everyday folks who get tapped to be on jury duty who have no medical expertise or background or understanding of labeling language or how doctors would understand labeling are now in a position to be able to decide when a label is sufficient or not, regardless of what the FDA believes.
Yeah, and that's why we think this is a defeat for patient interest. You're asking lay people not only to make the decision, but to step into the shoes of trained physicians and say, do I think that label's good enough from a physician's point of view? Because this labeling is not directed at lay people. It's professional labeling by its definition. That's who it's intended to reach. And so you're asking jurors who are lay people selected in at large from the community to say, well, how would I understand that if I were a doctor, and would that be good enough to put me on notice of the problems? It's a very hard thing to do, and the likelihood of getting it wrong is very high. And I think this case is a good illustration of why juries get it wrong. They're in a sympathetic posture. They see an injured person. They say, well, how could the labeling be adequate because somebody's been hurt?
Well, I think this is really kind of crazy. I mean, the juries simply don't have the expertise to be able to decide what language is appropriate or not for physicians to interpret. I just don't understand how they could come to that conclusion, but that's just me. What I'd like to ask you is, what impact will this court ruling have for the pharmaceutical industry, do you think?
Well, I mean, this court ruling will, you know, certainly change the ground rules for preemption defenses. It says to the pharmaceutical industry, if you want to say that your labeling was not only approved by the FDA, but that the FDA thought that labeling was sufficient and would not permit it to be changed because there was no scientific basis for the change, you're going to have to get a clear record from the FDA, which is the term the court used, meaning you can't deal with them informally. You're going to have to find a way to get the FDA to declare, we will not approve any changes. That's going to become a very contentious in the sense that, from FDA's point of view, having pharmaceutical companies come to them every time there's a potential controversy and say, we want a clear decision, we want to know which way to go, puts a huge burden on FDA's already taxed resources. So this is going to be difficult from the regulator's point of view, and it's also a difficult situation for pharmaceutical companies, because if juries can decide nothing more than your current labeling isn't sufficient, you don't even have any guidance on what you should do to make it better, because they don't have to tell you. And in this case, for example, if let's take this case because it's really indicative. Wyeth doesn't happen to sell this drug anymore, but somebody else is selling it, and it's got a label on it. You could read this decision and say, well, the only safe thing for the pharmaceutical company to do is change the label to foreclose push IV. And that way we'll be safe because we'll have eliminated any risk from our point of view. From a physician's point of view, there are numerous situations where physicians have believe that push IV is the most effective and the best treatment for the patient. What does the physician now do, faced with a label that says don't do it? Do you just shift the onus to the medical community, or do you brave it out? Wyeth, when was selling Phenergan under this label, believed that the label was clear about the risk, it had adequate cautions, and that it was appropriate to give physicians the option to choose the best method of administration. Not to take that away from them, not to put them up against the wall and say, do it at your peril.
So won't drug companies have to create extremely long inserts to try to protect themselves against any potential jury misunderstanding of the language? I mean, won't they have to be like 50 pages long?
Well, and this is what was occurring before the FDA tried to reform labeling based on that very problem. It was too long, it was too complex, and nobody paid any attention to it except in a lawsuit where you could wave it around and say, oh, we warned about that. And, you know, this kind of jury dominance always leads to risk-averse labeling, but risk-averse labeling is not necessarily in the public health interest.
And don't you think that this risk aversion is going to potentially slow down the drug approval process in general? Maybe pharmaceutical companies will be hesitant to develop drugs that, for example, for cancer, that have certain toxicities but are potentially life-saving, because they have these toxicities that they can't caveat to the point where they can protect themselves from legal suit. I mean, maybe it would just be easier never to develop the drugs or to slow down the process or, just be really risk-averse. I mean, isn't this going to reduce patient choice ultimately?
Well, there's certainly a lot of commentary and writing on the impact of liability on products that affect women's reproductive health, for example. For a long time, the industry shied away from them because there was massive liability and virtually nothing you could do to protect yourself in front of a jury if there was an impact on an unborn child. And therefore you had a child that was imperfect. That has a huge appeal to juries, and it made companies risk averse in that area, and the easiest way to be risk averse was turn your attention someplace else. So, any time you unleash a potent liability system, it's going to ultimately factor into the determination where's the best place to spend your research dollars. From an FDA point of view, the more you let FDA be criticized, because after all, every time a jury says this FDA approved label was inadequate, they're not only going after the defendant, but they're saying, FDA, you didn't do your job. And the court has a long footnote which kind of says, isn't the FDA overburdened and haven't there been studies saying it can't keep up? The more pressure you put on the FDA, the more culpability you put on the FDA, the more their tendency is going to be, well, we better be darn careful. We better be risk averse. And that tends to slow things down and leads back into massive labeling that goes on for pages and pages. And then from a medical point of view, who's going to read that on the one hand? And it can come back and zap a doctor on the other when the plaintiff says in a medical malpractice case, well, didn't you read the label and wasn't this contraindicated and why'd you do it? And so this is, you know, it's, liability can be, you know, it's not without its influence. It's just not a matter of handing money over to injured people.
Absolutely. I find this really so tragic on so many levels. I often speak with patient advocacy groups, Parkinson's Action Network, for example. I was just speaking to their CEO the other day, and she said that one of the top things on their mind is speeding up the process of getting drugs approved by the FDA because, these folks with Parkinson's are really eager for any kind of treatment that can provide modest benefit or better, we hope. And so they are constantly lobbying to have the FDA be less risk-averse, actually. And so, you know, with this kind of verdict, I can only imagine that groups like Parkinson's Action Network and others are going to have a much steeper hill to climb to really try to get access to medications that are in the pipeline.
Well, and you know, that last year there was a suit by the Abigail Alliance, if you may recall, saying, look, FDA is too slow and people are dying while they, you know, ponder over drugs. Here you have a whole system that keeps constantly pointing the finger at them, saying you failed, you approved something, and you said it was safe, but it isn't safe. Because the ultimate conclusion, as Justice Alito pointed out, is the FDA found that fenugreek, when distributed with the label that Wyeth had on it, was safe. And the jury said no. Now, if you're at the FDA, you've just been told you did a bum job. And that's getting a signal that says you've got to be more careful.
And fenugreek has been safely delivered 20 million times.
200 million times.
200 million times.
Or more. I mean, that was an old number. So, you know, it isn't as if this drug is out there rampantly causing injury.
Right.
The court says, well, there was evidence of 20 incidents. Well, 20 incidents out of 200 million applications? This is hardly, you know, and we know, I mean, the majority said, well, that was sufficient for Wyeth to have reevaluated the evidence. But the fact is there was no change in frequency or severity of injury. These are isolated incidents over a long period of time. And they really didn't change the calculus which had led to the labeling decision. But that's where the court disagreed with us. And I guess, you know, we're going to have to live with it.
Yes. Well, every doctor that I know who has looked at the fenugreek label felt that it was sufficiently caveated for them to understand that it should not be injected into somebody's artery or injected near an artery or in any way that could be an artery. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, the label said six times not to do that. And, you know, we doctors feel that we were sufficiently warned and that this was a...
Yes, if the case had been tried to a jury of doctors, it would have a different result.
Yes, it would have. I fully believe that.
But if you put that, if you've got an injured person sitting in front of a jury of lay people, it seems like the obvious conclusion is if the warnings were adequate, this wouldn't have happened.
The collateral damage of this case is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, and I think it's going to, you know, if I take the American Association for Justice at its word, they're going to use this as a foundation for saying we need to change the law on medical devices so we can go after those as well. So, you know, it's good for one industry, the lawsuit industry, and I don't think it's very good for anybody else, but it's what it is, and, you know, but it's not the end of preemption. I mean, the door is open, and I think reaction will be to try to lay the foundation to have a better record that's going to force the court to say, well, yes, there is a collision, and states have to give way to federal law.
So in closing then, Bert, do you have any final thoughts, maybe a summary statement about how the Wyeth versus Levine case will impact patients?
Well, I think that patients are unfortunately going to find that more of the decisions affecting their welfare are going to be in untrained hands, and that it would be preferable from their point of view, far preferable, to have those decisions made by well-trained people at the FDA. And hopefully over time we'll be able to make that point and to find a way to have that principle restored.
You've been listening to a podcast interview with Bert Rhine. I'm Dr. Val Jones, founder of GetBetterHealth.com.